You are listening to The Bird Calls. For more breakdowns on the Pelicans, including interviews with coaches, journalists, and opposing experts, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. All right, what's up, Pels fans? Welcome to the Bird Calls, where today the Pelicans are playoff bound. After giving us a scare with that four-game losing streak, the Pelicans respond with a four-game win streak, including a victory lap in the third quarter last night with one of the most incredible dunks I've ever seen. It almost looked like the Harlem Globetrotters came out at halftime. The Pelicans are now officially in the playoffs, regardless of what happens on Wednesday, but they still have everything to play on Wednesday. They can end up anywhere from the fourth seed to the fifth seed to the seventh seed to the eighth seed. I think that's right. These guys will give you the details much better than I ever could. To help us talk about the Spurs as well as everything that seems to be happening, we have three guests. We've got David Grubb. You can follow him at DM Grubb of Crescent City Sports. What's going on, David?
Hey, how are you doing? Always good to talk to you, Preston.
Yeah, man. Happy to have you back on. It's been a hot second. Always following you on Twitter. Some great stuff last night. Also, we have the editor-in-chief, Mr. Ali Cosell. Follow him at Ali Cosell. Ali, did you get any sleep last night?
Barely, man. Barely. I've had to do radio shows today. Stupid Pelicans, man, for winning.
Which ones did you go on today? You did Eric Asher, and what was the other one?
Yeah, and then I just got off with Scott Prather, who's out there in Cajun country on 1420 ESPN.
Look at you, superstar. And you haven't heard from D. Scott Alexander yet.
No, he's been tossing stuff my way. He's a good guy. You know, he promotes David, myself, the whole community. So he's great no matter what happens, you know.
Oh, well, I think he'd be even better if he had you back on the show. Also, the Prince of the Portacall, Mr. Kevin Berrios. Follow him at Kevin B for Bounce. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm freshly massaged and ready to roll. I want to ask Ollie, when's he going on Dr. Ruth? That's when I want to tune in.
Well, first of all, why don't you explain yourself about getting freshly massaged so that this suddenly didn't turn into our program for half the listeners?
Well, my girlfriend got me a 90-minute deep tissue massage for Valentine's Day, and I cashed in on it today.
Oh, jeez. Ollie, bite your tongue. We don't need to expand any further. David, you are the guest of honor. Happy to have you back on, man. It's been a couple of weeks. Take a moment, do a victory lap, just reflect on the season, of course, the ups and the downs, but just basically how it feels, not only for the organization, the New Orleans Pelicans, guys who were on the hot seat all year long, but also for the community of fans who have stuck with this team for the better part of 15 years now to get their third playoff appearance in the past 7 years. What do you think it means to this community?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I went back to in my article today is just how crazy of a ride it has been. You know, in the preseason, national projections had this team at about a 39-win clip, most probably finishing out of the playoffs. You had the start that wasn't exactly what people anticipated. It was rather slow. There were some great moments early on, but a lot of inconsistency. And then just when it felt like you're getting that rhythm with Boogie and AD starting to figure it out, he goes down. Then it feels like all hope is lost. Mirotić enters the picture. You go on the 10-game win streak. You get all the way up to third and fall backwards. And then, of course, the 4-game win streak that they're currently on, which culminated really with the peak, the high point being the Golden State win, and then yesterday kind of being the cherry on top as we head towards the playoffs. It's just been an incredible thing to watch. You know, you go from those peaks of frustration and exasperation with this team because you see what they're capable of and then the things that they're capable of on the negative end as well. So it's just been an exhilarating ride to watch them mature, to watch this group come together, a group of a lot of guys who hadn't played together, a coach that was on the hot seat, as you said, and an organization on the hot seat that responded with calm. That responded really this season with an unwavering focus on their plan. And then for the community, I would say it would have to be a little bit of a strange feeling because on the one hand, yeah, this is great. This is a playoff team. It's an exciting and entertaining team that we talked about for a good number of weeks now. But then at the same time, you wonder where that support has been. But you also say you don't want to say to fans it's too late to jump on the bandwagon because it isn't. If they want to become fans now and ride this thing into the playoffs, let's do that.
Yeah, all bandwagon fans are welcome at this point in time. The Pelicans are kind of a feel-good story, a Cinderella story, if you will, especially after Boogie going down. But the Pelicans just haven't enjoyed that much success. Anthony Davis has been the subject of so much criticism and speculation that he wants out or that he's going to go to Boston. So I was talking to Richie from Clips Nation a couple of days ago, and those guys are all rooting for us. Everybody around the association who's not directly involved in the playoffs are kind of quietly rooting for the Pelicans to at least, I don't know, cause some disruption in the playoffs. Now, before I get to Kevin, I'm going to poke Ollie with a cattle prod a little bit. Ollie, we did some deep digging last night. Since Boogie went down, I think the Pelicans are somewhere around 20 and 13. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. But of those wins, the Pelicans are 12-0 against teams that are not playoff contenders. How good are the Pelicans right now? And do you still think they can inflict some damage in the first round?
Oh, that's a good question, Preston, because you're right. They haven't had those convincing wins consistently over the better teams in the league. That being said, though, one thing that I think everybody needs to look at is simply – well, it's not simply. It's three things, really. You look at their road record. It's not easy to win on the road despite what people say. Despite all these travel comforts everybody has nowadays and these players, you know, sleeping in the best hotels, flying on charter planes, getting the best meals, treatment, et cetera, it's still not an easy thing to go ahead and win on the road. And the Pelicans have been one of the best teams in that capacity. And that's been honestly a surprise considering – how they fared on the road in past years, including 3 years ago. Next thing you want to look at is how this team closes out in final minutes of the game. And I wrote an article about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I think David did as well in a similar fashion as to where they're a very resilient team. This team in years past, you know, they'd be up and then they'd go down or they'd be trailing. They wouldn't have that attack, that mentality to come back and close out a lot of wins. As to where this season, guess who's the best crunch time team in the league? It's the Pelicans. So there's a lot of things that point to this team may be better than their record against the better competition. I think, honestly, we're in for a good ride. The fact that, and you've got to point to this win, recent win against the Warriors, who honestly tried to win that game as you know, outside of Stephen Curry not being, they went full bore into trying to get that win for Steve Kerr. And guess what? The Pelicans won. So I think it says a lot about what we can expect, which is the unexpected. But that being said, the Pelicans have a chance, regardless of the opponent, I think, on making some noise.
Kevin, I've got an interesting question for you. I prefaced this episode with the three playoff appearances, including this one, the Pelicans have had in the past 7 years, one being in 2010-11 when the Pelicans stole two games from the Lakers, and the other one, of course, being that 14-15 season with that regular season clinching playoff spot victory over San Antonio by virtue of the tiebreaker with Oklahoma City. Now, let's pull those three teams together, Kevin. Which of these three playoff teams do you think is the best?
Ooh, that's tough. This one is definitely my favorite one. I'll say that. I would have to say I think this is possibly the deepest and most diverse team for sure. So I'm gonna go with this one. I think this is a team where Anthony Davis is right now in his career, the level he's playing at, that for pretty much every series, any team we're going to play in the playoffs, with the exclusion of the Golden State Warriors, I think we will have the best player on the court. I think Kevin Durant is a better player than AD at this time. I think you look at, you know, Harden is the MVP clearly, and he's had that kind of season. The difference between Harden and AD is that Harden can be a more impactful player because he's a player that has the ball in his hands. He's that kind of player. But if you just look at basketball dominance, ability to score all over the court and play defense, I believe Anthony Davis is the best player on the court in any of those matchups outside of Kevin Durant. And it's close with Kevin Durant. It's just, and that's not a knock on AD. I mean, Kevin Durant is an incredible player. So I think, like, you have him and we have Jrue Holiday playing at the level he's playing. And if you have Mirotić, if this isn't a flash in the pan, if this is the Mirotić we're getting, or even if we get 70% of this Mirotić going forward, that's a solid unit to go up against anybody. Then you just need one bench guy to step up his game, whether that's Ian Clark, or I don't know if you want to consider Etuan Moore a bench guy. I mean, more of like a secondary role player kind of guy from those big three. or Darius Miller, somebody like that can step up their game, check Diallo, then I think you have a chance in any series. And I don't think that we could have felt that way with the last iteration of a playoff team. Now with the Chris Paul iteration, maybe. But then again, it's like, really, Chris Paul drove that team. Trevor Ariza had an amazing series. David West was out. We were Carl Landry had an amazing series, but you know, we had a guy like Marco Bellinelli, who, you know, some people like him. I never did, but I felt like at that time he definitely let the Pelicans down. There wasn't a lot of depth there, so I think like this is the most complete team going forward.
Nice response. I put you on the spot on that one, so thank you for going there with me. We've got a couple of questions concerning how to properly celebrate this. But before we do that, I want to ask the three of you the same question. I'll start with Grubb. I've been listening to a lot of national podcasts today, getting kind of a pulse on what the league's perspective is on the Pelicans making the playoffs for the first time in 3 years and what they think the Pelicans are capable of. And much to my chagrin, everybody's kind of pointing to the Pelicans as the team that every hosting playoff team wants to face. All four of these teams, whether it be Portland, Utah, the Rockets, or the Warriors, are all pointing to the Pelicans. They're all more afraid of Jimmy Butler, Paul Millsap, and Denver Nuggets, especially if Jamal Murray can get hot. And everybody's kind of stepping away from being afraid of the Pelicans. Do you think that's fair or unfair, David?
I think it's in line with the perception of this team throughout the year. I think we've seen that a lot of people have not paid attention to what the Pelicans have been doing over the course of the season. And I think especially in relation to a team like the Timberwolves, which is less experienced than the Pelicans in a lot of ways, with their frontline players, doesn't have a player on the level of Anthony Davis just yet, even though Karl Anthony Towns is a great player, and so is Jimmy Butler, and Andrew Wiggins is an ascending player, but they're not, none of them are on the level of Anthony Davis. I think a lot of this really comes down to matchups and how teams fare against each other. Nobody against the Warriors would be a favorite. I think the only team outside of the Warriors, the Rockets, which of course are the number one and two seeds, that the Pelicans would be really have a real difficult problem with, it'd be Utah, which is a team that's basically built to stop the things that the Pelicans do well. Outside of that, I don't think that Portland is a team that can look at the Pelicans and think that they've gotten off easy. You know, the Pelicans have played very well against Portland this season, as has Anthony Davis in particular. And I'd say the same for Oklahoma City or for Denver. You know, Denver obviously has been a problem for the Pelicans at times, but I don't think that there's this amount of separation there, especially with Denver's struggles on the road, that would make them a favorite. So outside of those top two and Utah, I think the Pelicans are even money, if not a favorite, against anybody else.
Ali, I'm going to throw this over to you. Obviously, all four of these teams have enjoyed a lot of success against the Pelicans, and we'd like to draw Portland in that first round if possible. If the Jazz can somehow leapfrog them, the Pelicans sit at their fifth spot, and Portland moves up to the fourth spot. But do you think all of these teams should be so should have so much yearning to face the Pelicans?
No, absolutely not. And I don't care what national guys say, because guess what? They've been wrong all season long. So I don't trust their judgment. I don't trust that they even watch even 5 or 10 games of the Pelicans this season. I saw maybe just a couple of those guys. So no, I don't care what they say. But it's good, though. You know what's good? It's good to be a Cinderella story. And I feel like that's what the Pelicans are kind of being built up to be, because I honestly see this team winning a couple of games. If, again, this is without without a doubt, Pelicans have to avoid that 7 or 8 seed. I'm talking about landing, you know, beating the Spurs tomorrow. And so moving up from there, I feel like the Pelicans can get a win or two off of all these teams. But you're right, there's certain matchups that favor the Pelicans a lot more. And I'm with you. I actually enjoy all of them, or I don't mind any of them, I should say, outside of the Utah Jazz. I just think that would be a terrible, terrible matchup. And we've all talked about, all four of us, have all mentioned, I think, at one time or another, that the Utah Jazz simply would dominate the Pelicans like they have all regular season. It took for the Pelicans' lone win against Utah to beat them when they were playing really bad ball. And we had DeMarcus Cousins at the time, too. But since then, wow, in that second half, I want to say the Jazz have won 30 of their last 40 games, something like that. So you just don't want to have to face that buzzsaw, Preston.
Yeah, I put something up on Twitter. The Pelicans haven't beat the Jazz without Rudy Gobert in the lineup in over 2 years now. I think it's been something like 26 months since the last time that they were able to do it. And at the time, the Pelicans sported a starting lineup of AD, Omar Asik, Norris Cole, Dante Cunningham, and Bryce DeJean Jones. I know it's too soon. May he rest in peace. What a terrible story. But that's how long ago was the last time the Pelicans were able to defeat Rudy Gobert. With that being said, they're going to be inexperienced with guys like Donovan Mitchell carrying such a heavy load. He's met and exceeded any expectation anybody had for him. Will he come up against a rookie wall in the playoffs? Time will tell. With that being said, Kevin, does any part of you hope that the Pelicans do end up at the seventh and eighth seed and kind of run into a David versus Goliath type scenario where they do face off with the Warriors without Steph Curry or against the Houston Rockets against James Harden and Chris Paul, who have had their own playoff disappointments recently?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not really worried about who we end up facing. I agree with Ollie that we've become sort of a Cinderella story. And I think that we're sort of like America's team for those teams that are in smaller markets or people who don't have teams because they're tired of seeing, like, you know, the big cities always getting, or the, like, you know, the real successful team acquiring the star and stuff like that, and how, you know, we're been through a lot of adversity. You know, I mean, you talk about Bryce Jones, we had a player die, we have our owner just died, we had, you know, threats of moving, all of these things that we've been through, injury ravaged seasons. And I think it's, you know, people are ready for us to play well and to challenge these teams, and I'm ready for us to challenge any of those teams. So, like, I'm just bring on whoever you got, and I think we're gonna give them their best shot. And I think, you know, you were talking about the national media guys saying that we're the team that everybody wants to face. I think a lot of that stems from in the media, in the blogosphere, all of that stuff. Everybody wants to point out when they're right about something, you know? And I think, you know, that's their way of being like, you know, if we do lose, if we end up facing the Warriors and we get swept or just get a game, or the Rockets, you know, like, see, we told you so, they weren't that good of a team. I told you before, they just got lucky down the stretch. I was right all along. It was just mere luck. They caught some people at the right time and made it in, you know, they can shape the narrative like that. Whereas, sure, like, I feel like, I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm happy when I'm wrong about something, when I get proved wrong. 'Cause I want, you know, like, you know, for instance, you know, I've been one of Alvin Gentry's biggest critics, and I'm happy to see that this team has succeeded so well since Boogie went down and how he changed the way the team plays. I know it fits more of what he wants to do, but I'm happy to be wrong about him being a bad coach. Like, I want that to be I don't want to see change. I want everybody to succeed. Even when we make a signing I don't like, I hope that guy proves me wrong. I don't want to go back and be like, hey, I told you that guy was bad or this guy was terrible. I want those people to prove me wrong because I want this team to be successful. And I think a lot of the negative attention that the Pelicans get is because of that. People underestimated them or just didn't think that wanted to see it, or selfishly wanted us to fail so they could poach our top players to their squads. So I think that's where a lot of that comes from. But, you know, bring on whoever you got. I'm ready to go up against them. And like I said, I feel like we have the best player in every series outside of the Warriors. So if you have the best player, you have a chance to win, you know, any night.
Well said. And I do want to piggyback off something you said. I really respect our community, specifically you three, because you guys are very good at pointing out your flaws. I feel like this is an industry where everybody chooses to bring back old tweets of stuff that they got right. And you guys have absolutely no fear in pointing out things that you got wrong. And one thing that I got wrong, of course, was general manager Dell Demps. All last offseason, Kevin was on Gentry and I was on Demps. Following seven seasons of 400 basketball, just two playoff appearances, just two playoff wins, and that being back with Chris Paul, I thought it was time to pull the plug. I thought 7 years was enough, Ron. And here he's pulled off the improbable. And I understand that it's not just him. You can give the kudos to Alvin Gentry, who could have have expected what we've gotten from Drew Holiday. But like Kevin said, it is really nice to be proven wrong, especially about something that involves making your team successful. So I just wanted to point out that I really respect that Kevin has never hesitated to back off some of his statements from Alvin Gentry, even though going into this offseason, I know how passionate you were against having him as the head coach. So kudos to you, sir, and kudos to these guys. Let's start with some questions. I'm going to throw this one over to David. This one is from Waka Waka Wakanda. Always sends in some great questions. Thank you so much to him. He says, how excited are you guys that the Pelicans took care of business and didn't have to depend on anyone else to help them get into the playoffs, David?
I think that was the most important thing to me, was seeing how they were going to respond after getting the win at Golden State, that they wouldn't cruise. And there were some concerns last night for moments that, once they built the lead and they let the Clippers get back into it, I was a little bit worried that maybe they hadn't brought the intensity. But, you know, to see them walk into the playoffs and not back into the playoffs, I think is a testament to the mentality that this team has had all season, and particularly since DeMarcus went down, that when they faced adversity, they've decided that they're going to press ahead. And it doesn't always look pretty and it doesn't always look coordinated, but they've done it as a group, and they fought. And I think that's the story of the season, no matter how it ends, is the incredible competitiveness of this team to put themselves in this position. And last night was great evidence of that. And now they'll go into this last game, with the chance to have their longest win streak going into the postseason in over a decade. You know, so, they are not traditionally a team that goes into the postseason hot. I think the longest streak outside of this previously is like 2 games. They hadn't gone in with a winning streak of more than 2 games in, I think it's 2004. So, I mean, this is an exceptional team in that regard. And I think that's something to be proud of and excited about.
Ali, I'm going to make this one a two-part question. The first part of it is also from Waka Waka Wakanda. He said the most surprising thing about the season is the resiliency and mental fortitude of this team in crunch time, especially on the road. And the second part of this that I want to add to it, Ali, is I think the Pelicans go into the postseason with one distinct advantage, even if they don't have a talent advantage over teams like Houston and Golden State. And that's that they have been playing for their playoff lives all season long. And these guys have had these heavy minute load workloads all season long. Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday traditionally in the top 10 minutes played in the past 2 years. These guys are already accustomed to those workloads. Now, we know that once the playoffs start, guys like, you know, James Harden and Kevin Durant, who have been averaging anywhere from 32 to 34 minutes, their minutes are going to uptick. They're going to be somewhere closer to 38 and 40. But I think that guys like Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis are better equipped to do that right from the get-go because they've already been doing that.
That's a good argument. And that's one I haven't thought of, it, but you're absolutely right. Suddenly, when you take a player out of their comfort zone, there's no telling how he's going to react. As to where the Pelicans, yeah, they've been playing for a month and a half for their playoff lives. They've been playing huge minutes. So the core guys, you've got to expect, are all ready for this next step. And in crunch times, they've built up a reputation as a team that does really well. Just looking at some numbers while you're asking me the question, Pelicans are currently ranked 5th in the league in terms of net rating in the last 5 minutes of games where it's a close game. And there was 50 of those games. Out of 81 games, Pelicans played in 50 of those where they won 30 of them. They've all season long have shown that resiliency, albeit they had that small slip up before this 4-game winning streak. But outside of that, they've been, I think, stellar. So you point to that, and then you also got to look at another thing is how they're trending. Everything's trending in the right way, Preston. I think that's the biggest thing. You mentioned how, asked how the players can adjust to their roles being increasing, everything like that. I feel like everything for the Pelicans is just going to be the most seamless transition into the playoffs. Since Boogie went down, for instance, their defense has been playing as a top 5 team in the league, allowing somewhere around 104 points per 100 possessions. That's outstanding, considering the pace the Pelicans play at. And, of course, we see all those opportunities opponents have in transition. That's outstanding defense. And then, of course, offensively, they've gotten their act back together. So I feel like they're firing on all cylinders. These guys are used to their roles. And as you mentioned, mentally, they're used to having the fight to win for everything that they can get just to make the playoffs. So I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it. These guys are ready as they'll ever be for the playoffs. And they're probably more ready than almost any team outside of the ones that have, you know, a wealth of experience, like, you know, Golden State Warriors or somebody.
Yeah, they certainly could go into the playoffs on a hot streak if they are able to upend San Antonio on the last day of the regular season, which is tomorrow. Kevin, we got some good questions from Tejado. Some of them we've already answered, and you specifically answered them. So I'm going to finish with his last one. He says, Jrue Holiday has surprised me more than I could have imagined. Pelicans rally after Boogie goes down is unreal. And I want to trace this back to last summer. We all harped on Jrue Holiday and his contract. And of course, McNamara did as well. It was a popular topic of conversation to debate whether or not he deserved that $150 million incentive late in deal. And of course, he's lived up to it and more. You can argue whether or not the market dictated what he needed to make or if the Pelicans could have offered him less if they were sort of negotiating against themselves. But one thing you can't argue is how much he's improved this year on both ends of the floor. He was already a top-notch defender, but I can argue that he's even taken it up a notch on that end of the floor as well as the offensive side of the floor. Tell me, Kevin, what is the biggest aspect of Jrue Holiday's game that's improved this year that surprises you the most?
Well, I'll definitely say, starting in the offseason, I definitely wanted Jrue back. And I did question the amount of the contract, but I was like, whatever it takes to get him, because I thought he was integral to keeping us adequate defensively. And he was always a great defender, but I agree 100%. He seems to have stepped up a notch. And I know Kumar is working right now on a highlight reel of Jrue's defense, which he did last year too. And those are great. So keep a lookout for that. I'm looking forward to watching those whenever that gets up. But yeah, I think the biggest thing he's improved in is what we've always questioned about him is aggressiveness on offense. We see a totally different Jrue Holiday, an attacking Jrue Holiday, a guy who's willing to take the team on his back offensively. We saw it in flashes every now and then, including last year. There was a little stretch run right before we got Boogie where he was scoring really well. He was taking a ball, a large number of shots and getting to the rim and shooting well. But his aggression is something like we've never seen from him in New Orleans. I watched a little bit of him when he played in Philly because I actually kind of liked that team. I liked the Lou Williams, Iguodala, Holiday team. So I watched them a little bit on League Pass back then, and he was more aggressive then, but nowhere near to the level that he is now. And that's been the main thing.
David, let's go ahead and start talking about the game last night against the Clippers. Of course, the one that got us into the playoffs. Of course, the final score, 113-100. The Pelicans took charge in the third, at the end of the second into the third with that 33-6 run. But the question that I want to pose to you directly involves Nikola Mirotic and not just his improving play. You can check out Adam Clausen's tweet. Has a really nice transition between pre-beard and post-beard. His numbers before last night, 28 points on 56% from the floor, 52% from three, and 10 rebounds. Last night, he had 24 points and 16 rebounds on four threes. He's been shooting lights out from three in the past four games. Not only is his improved play something that we should discuss, David, but also he's been playing a lot of minutes at center. Have you noticed that?
I think for the matchups that the Pelicans have had over these last few games, it was fine to do that. It allowed... there weren't great bigs that you were facing, and especially offensively, DeAndre Jordan is a very talented big, but he doesn't present a lot of problems in the low post. So flexibility wise, it wasn't like, Golden State again and the team that didn't have a lot of height or girth in the middle. And you can say the same for the other teams on the streak that they've faced. But the thing that is interesting to me is that playing him at center does engage him defensively. It forces him to be where the action is in that regard. And it makes him a rebounder, which is an important thing to have. They did not have someone to help Anthony on the boards. And now Mirotic has moved back into that position. And then offensively, he knows he can beat opposing centers down the floor. So what we're seeing out of him is much more movement. And to me, that was more important than seeing the shots go in at first. It was just that he was willing to be active. He was making himself available as a cutter. He was using the dribble to bring himself closer to the basket for shots. So all those things, I think, making that switch to center has kind of brought that to him because the matchups are in his favor. And I think that switch mentally, flip the switch mentally for him. I don't put a lot of it on the beard. I'm not a superstitious person. I think more of it's just been an aggressive plan by Alvin Gentry to say, we need to keep Nico involved. We need to keep his hands on the basketball in a variety of different ways, including on the defensive end. And I think that that's worked in the Pelicans' benefit.
Kevin, I want to go over to you because I have an Etuan Moore question, and you and I have been protectors of the Etuan Moore shield dating back to last offseason and possibly before. In the past five games, he was getting a bit of ridicule in previous months for his up and down play. I will defend him to the death, his out of position, the versatility that he's been forced into this year, that not necessarily is the most comfortable position for him. He always kind of relished that off-the-bench utility scorer role. And he's had an opportunity to go back to that to an extent with Solomon Hill getting heavy minutes. In the past five games, he's averaging 17 points per game on remarkable shooting. Kevin, do you feel like Etuan Moore, the guy that we love and adore, is back and ready to play some offense and contribute heavily in much of the way Ian Clark has going into the playoffs?
I hope so. I mean, you know, he definitely hit a lull and those things happen. And I'm hoping he just shot his way out of it, you know. Again, we look at matchups that cause problems for him. If we do end up playing the Jazz, then, you know, Joe Ingles is a guy that's going to be tough for him to guard. But in other teams play a lot of smaller guys or guys that just aren't as physically imposing as a guy like either like a Wiggins or a Joe Ingles that could beat him up. But, you know, it's good once you start. I think he kept trying to get in the lane, which is good. He's trying to get his floater going, and then that got going, and then the three ball started falling again. And if we have that, hopefully he fought his way through whatever wall he was in, and him and Ian Clark both have been very good lately. I was surprised at how well Ian Clark looked, considering coming off an injury that he was supposed to miss the rest of this regular season and maybe be a little questionable going into the playoffs. If those two guys are playing at that level that they're playing at and Mirotić is playing well, you know, you have to be excited. I think Moore's back. I don't see any reason not to think he is. I mean, obviously, as we said, he plays out of position much of the game. So he's going to have moments where he's getting abused defensively, but that's just what we live with when we just try to outscore people and have AD and Drew Holiday and other defenders help cover for him. And it's worked well the last few games, and I think it should carry over into the playoffs.
Ali, I saved this question for you because, like me, you're kind of an enthusiastic guy and you can get passionate from time to time. And the reason that I say this is because I want to bring up Anthony Davis. And we just expect the best and the most from him at all times. And so sometimes we go entire podcasts without even mentioning his name. Last night, just a ho-hum performance, 28 points, 6 rebounds, 5 blocks, and of course that hilarious visual of him trying to get the ball away from Boban. But the reason that I bring him up is we've grown accustomed to these spectacular alley-oops. But last night, we saw something that I have never seen in my life. Going into the transition, when Rajon Rondo threw up the ball, I thought it was originally intended for Etuan Moore. And when I saw how high it went off the glass, I thought it was an easy turnover and a transition leading the other way. Just write a love letter to Anthony Davis and what he's capable of.
What's he capable of? Yeah, it's funny how a player who's been in the league as long as he has, we're still talking about seeing him almost for the first time after he does something amazing. And I think that is what exclusively shows what a transcendent player he is. He is finally seizing upon that mantle he was given so early in his career. You know, basically after that 24-15 season, so much was expected of him. So it was almost kind of a letdown that, you know, both personally and the team didn't have that success riding off of that last postseason appearance. So, yeah, it's just great to see that this season he's taken another step. People haven't noticed this, but he's been taking steps ever since that postseason as to where he's been trying to make himself a more versatile player, as to where he doesn't have to rely on a point guard to create offense for him. And so this season he's added that ball handling. But just sticking to the topic, though, Preston, you're right. I mean, that dunk almost, you know, is a perfect analogy for just how he still has that wow factor, that at any given moment, in any given game, he can explode for something unimaginable, something amazing. For instance, his stat line for just this month of April, I haven't heard one person tweet it out, write about it, anything, but he's averaging 30 points, grabbing 10 rebounds a game, averaging over three blocks, almost 3.5 per game, over two steals a game, and shooting lights out from everywhere on the floor. Yeah, guess what? Not a single person's written about it, and we're 5 games into this month. So it's just a testament to this guy. I can go on and on about him, and I'm hoping that we all can by a deep playoff run, because honestly, that's where his next step is. And I know David and I have talked about it in games a lot on what a player of his caliber needs to do to take that next step. And AD knows, just like he made those remarks to Rachel Nichols, he knows that he's going to be judged by what he does in the postseason. And so far, even though he's had a great stat line, he's got 4 losses attached and no wins. So he's going to be looking to change that. And hopefully there'll be a lot more fireworks along the way that we can enjoy.
David, I want to hop off the positive train for just a second and talk about one of the things that didn't go so right for the Pelicans last night. And of course, that is in reference to being out rebounded by 13, 16 offensive rebounds, points in the paint. They were out dueled by 18. But I want to harp on rebounds, because as soon as the Pelicans took Emeka Okafor out of the lineup and inserted Nikola Mirotic, they have been beaten on that end of the floor, and it hasn't really cost them anything yet because the Pelicans have been so remarkably efficient on offense. But just this month alone, I can't remember how many games it's been, but the Pelicans are rebounding the ball 6 times fewer than they were in previous months and over the season as a whole. Are you concerned about this at all going forward?
Yes, because, you know, as we talked about, they've played a lot of teams that are below 500 over these past few weeks, and you can get away with those types of things. But in the playoffs, obviously rebounding and having multiple chances with the basketball is an extremely important facet of the game. This team has to rebound better. It will never be a great rebounding team as presently constructed, but it has to be better than what it has been. It can't give up the number of offensive rebounds that we've seen in certain games where they've given up 16, you know, offensive rebounds to an opponent. Or, and they can't just concede the lane as they have on a number of occasions. I mean, last night, and you could say it against the Golden State game for a while too, there were just times where teams have been able to just go up and down the court and through the lane with very little resistance. And that's partially because, again, you don't have a lot of physical size out on the wings to bump cutters and divert them towards Anthony Davis or Mirotic to slow them down. And there isn't really a great shot blocker outside of Okafor, and he's just not getting those minutes. I think it's you know, against teams in the playoffs, you're going to have to be more physical. There will be, times when the game gets very slow, and we know that the Pelicans struggle in those situations. So rebounding becomes an extremely important thing. So that means there'll have to be more team rebounding by this group, and especially, I would say, probably by Rajon Rondo, who has shown that he's a great rebounder at the guard position.
Kevin, the Pelicans look to be kind of pacing themselves early on in this game, much in the way that they did about this against the Suns before that 33-6 explosion. Were you at all concerned at any point in the first half?
Before I go into that, I just want to add something to what David was talking about just now. I want to ask you guys a question. We're all basically kind of worried about the Utah Jazz game if we have to play the Utah Jazz because of Gobert, because of Ingles against Moore. But what would you think, as I think this is an opponent that we can get away with this lineup with, where you would have AD, Mirotic, and Emeka Okafor playing solid, or even Cheick Diallo playing solid minutes together, because I think Mirotic could do a fine job against Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles is not an athlete, and they're like big, the same size. So that would take away that mismatch of Moore having to guard him, but also give you that rebounding that you were missing in other lineups.
Ollie?
Ingles still spreads them out. I'm just sorry. I just think my issue would be that Ingles would still spread them out, and they'd get rebounding from Favors or from, you know, even Mitchell is a solid rebounder as a guard. And Rubio has done a good job rebounding when he plays against the Pelicans. So I don't think it's a one player switch that all of a sudden makes it easier. And I'm not saying that's what you're trying to say. I just think Utah, the way that they play along with their personnel, just makes it very difficult to match up.
I can see Alvin Gentry possibly trying that against Utah, Kevin, because it kind of does make sense, especially if they're struggling, that is the Pelicans are. But I think that would take away too much of what they try and do offensively. And of course, we all know that, and that's to push the pace. I think if you remove another guy that can get up the floor in a hurry and has that dribbling capability of getting through and around players, I think that would take away more than what it would add possibly defensively on the and on the boards.
Okay. Now, sorry, Preston, back to your question. I did, you know, the way the game started, I made the joke, I'm talking about the Clippers game last night you were asking me about, that nobody seemed to be able to score. I was like, oh, baseball is also on ESPN too. So, you know, like it hadn't switched over. So I was a little bit worried when we came out looking a little bit flat, but they were a little bit flat too. But then once, you know, once we got going, it was like, okay, we got this one. You know, towards the end of the first quarter, I was like, okay, this game's in the bag. You know, the way Drew and AD were playing defensively was incredible. Like, you could make a case for Drew Holiday being first team all defense just from that first quarter of that one single game. That's how incredible his defensive presence was. So very quickly I was like, okay, this one's in the sack, you know, especially knowing that you weren't going to see Lou Williams, who could come off the bench and get hot and change the course of the game, or even Austin Rivers, who's, you know, played a lot better down the stretch this year than we're used to. So yeah, at the very beginning, I did have a little doubt, but it went away very quickly.
All right. Some of those things you were mentioning about the Clippers coming out and struggling, they were 8 of 19 from the free throw line. So that was a lot of points that could have contributed to making this one a bit more competitive. And while the Pelicans were 11 and 30 from three, the Clippers were just 2 of 17. So that was another struggle that went against them in their favor. But you can attribute a lot of that to the Pelicans defense. Like I think Ali was saying earlier, the Pelicans have played like a top five defense and have defended the 3-point shot much better. And a lot of that is having Nikola Mirotic out on the floor, having a lot more movement, having a lot more foot speed, and frankly, just trying harder than maybe they did back in December. Are you guys ready to get to previewing San Antonio? Is there anything else you want to touch upon in this game?
No, I just think
of your answer.
Yeah, they were just trying to. Yeah.
All right, great. Let's talk about San Antonio. Obviously, the difference right now between losing and winning is a highly coveted fourth or fifth seed as opposed to a seventh or eighth seed. We've already discussed why the Pelicans are leery to face Golden State or Houston in the first round and would prefer Utah. But I think everybody would agree that Portland is the team that we would most like to draw in the first round. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
All right, Universal. Let's talk about the Spurs, 43 and 16. These guys like to slow it down and muck it up. They're 29th in pace, first in defense, third in defensive rating, 17th in offensive rating. So they are pretty efficient on the offensive floor, even though they play a lot of half-court offense. They don't foul. They block shots. They don't turn the ball over. They are 7th in offensive rebounds, something the Pelicans have really been struggling with right now. However, the Spurs have been kind of struggling of late. They lost 2 last week to the Clippers and the Lakers back-to-back games before bouncing back against the Blazers, who were at full strength at the time. I know that Damian Lillard had missed a couple of games there with an ankle, and then they survived the Kings last night in a game that I don't know if you guys were closely watching. It ended up being 98-93, but the Kings led throughout all the way through the end of the third quarter before San Antonio kind of put their foot on the gas pedal early on in the fourth. The last time these two teams matched up, Nola erased a 15-point deficit. I can't remember exactly when it was in the fourth quarter, probably somewhere around the 3-minute mark, where the Pelicans pulled to within 91-90. And I was feeling pretty confident that they were going to do it yet again, come back on an opponent and upset them. And then Anthony Davis was tossed from the game. And that one was the one that we talked about. Rajon Rondo had a negative 23 rating in 24 minutes going into that matchup. I didn't like him against some of those backcourt players, specifically DeJounte Murray and Quinn Cook, those quicker guys who like to attack on the baseline, who like to cut over screens. I think those aren't the optimal matchups for Rajon Rondo defensively. I like having him on guys like Andre Iguodala, who struggle with the shot. And I prefer them taking him down the post and using their size over him, because at least in that instance, you can have somebody like Anthony Davis or Mirotić come over and help. Anyway, I digress. We'll start with our guest of honor, David Grubb. What's going to happen on Wednesday?
I think it's going to be a very tight game. You know, the key always against the Spurs is how well do you execute? Do you not beat yourself? Because they are not the team that's now able to force the action as they were with Kawhi Leonard on the floor. So they've become just a great predatory team. They know what they're going to do, and they try to force you to do things that you don't want to do. So the Pelicans will have to execute. And what you hope is that the Pelicans come into this the same way they viewed the Clippers game, that it's business, that they have to come in and start assert themselves early, show that they're dominant on their home floor, and that this game is not something that the Spurs are going to be able to walk away with. If they do that, I think that they can, you know, that they should win. This is a game that they're supposed to win, and they should close the season out on a 5-game win streak. But they have to do, they have to play the kind of basketball that they've played the last 4 games. And that's, you know, relatively mistake-free, guys not exceeding their roles and getting some lockdown defense on the perimeter. Again, from Jrue Holiday, he'll have to do that one more time, you know, to end the regular season. And Anthony Davis is going to have to probably score 30 again. But that's what this team has been able to do. And so they just have to do it one more time. But I do think it'll be a very close game.
I'm going to go over to Ali next. The Pelicans did not have Solomon Hill the last time they faced these guys. So DeAndre Liggins got a couple of minutes. I think he got somewhere around 10. And at this point in time, Alvin Gentry chose to start Nikola Mirotic over Emeka Okafor, which didn't work out in their favor at the time, as Mirotic just shot 3 for 12, and he was still in the middle of that slump. Here's what I want to ask you, Ali, and of course you can talk about whichever subject that you want, but Rajon Rondo in his last performance against the Spurs struggled. Where would you, obviously the Pelicans need him on the floor to initiate offense. Where would you hide him?
I think I would honestly stick him maybe on Danny Green. Danny Green cannot, for the life of him, make a 3-point shot in this month. I just looked. He's at 13%. He's gotten to the point where Coach Pop can't even keep him out there on the court. He plays 16 minutes against the Kings. That's pretty incredible stuff. So you basically find a non-shooter, and you know what? The Spurs have quite a few of them. I don't particularly like him on Murray simply because Murray's bigger, a lot quicker. But a guy like Green, who honestly doesn't look to beat anybody off a dribble, doesn't look for the cuts, et cetera, he only is basically just a spot-up shooter. That's a guy that would be optimal to stick Rondo on a guy like him. And then, of course, then you could use a Holiday to stick out on Patty Mills, and then when either Tony Parker or Manu Ginobili come in the game. So I really do like this matchup for the Pelicans. And of course, Anthony Davis is going to have to play at his best. I feel like LaMarcus Aldridge has gotten the better of him, especially in that last game. Aldridge has been playing, you know, if it wasn't for him, there's no way the Spurs would be in the playoffs right now. Simply put, he's been playing stellar ball for them. I know he had a kind of an off game against the Kings, but before that, he's been on a heck of a roll, averaging right around 30 points a game. So AD's, I like it though, because AD can step up, and if AD's got his head screwed on, which nobody should think otherwise, it's going to be a tight matchup there. And then you've got, like I said, Holiday on Mills. And then what I like is Rudy Gay coming off the bench has always been kind of a problem, I feel, especially for the Pelicans, you know, having that big wing coming off the bench. And the Pelicans have Solomon Hill. Granted, Solomon, boy, he needs to make a shot, huh? I was looking, he hasn't made a shot in 4 games, hasn't made a 3 in like maybe 5 games or something like that. But defensively, he's giving that effort, and you're hoping that somehow sooner or later he's going to be or find enough of an offense, be enough of a difference maker somewhere else other than defensively for him to earn minutes from Gentry in the playoffs. Because right now, I'm not even certain you want him included for, you know, 10-plus minutes in games, because honestly, he's just not giving anything for you. He's not giving that rebounding, that playmaking, even though he's never been a big playmaker. He's always been able to make a couple of good assists, you know, where it leads to easy baskets. So there's a lot to like about this matchup, Preston. I know I've gone roundabout way in answering this question, but I like it, and I really think that the Pelicans are going to emerge victorious.
Now, while the Pelicans have a lot of advantages in that they have Solomon Hill back over DeAndre Liggins, and we can debate whether or not, you know, who's playing better basketball right now. Obviously, Solo's been a zero offensively, but the Pelicans have shortened their rotation. It's made them a lot better. The Spurs, so too, are going to do the exact same thing. Don't expect a lot of minutes from Davis Bertans, Bryn Forbes, those type of guys. It's going to be a short lineup. Rudy Gay only played 6 minutes the last time we faced them because he was coming back. I want to say it was his ankle. And of course, there's always going to be a heavy minute workload, somewhere around 20 to 25 from Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Pau Gasol, who only had 10 minutes. He was also coming back from an ankle injury. What I want to ask you, Kevin, dating back to something we talked with Grubb about, Mirotic getting some minutes at center. We know how Anthony Davis always relishes the opportunity to defend LaMarcus Aldridge, and I think he does as good a job as anybody in the league. With that being said, the last time these two guys faced off, we probably lost Grubb. Is that who we lost?
Yeah.
All right, great. Grubb, thank you so much. Again, follow him at DM Grubb and at Crescent City Sports. Always love having him on. Kevin, back to what we were talking about with Anthony Davis. He got into foul trouble early, and it reduced his minute workload to somewhere around 36 on the night. If he had played a couple more minutes and gotten up to 38, the Pelicans maybe walk away with a win. Do you still rely on Anthony Davis to go head-to-head with LaMarcus Aldridge this game, or do you put somebody like Mirotić Diallo or Okafor on him for large spurts of time?
No, I definitely think you put Anthony Davis on him. I mean, he's the Spurs' best player. He plays the same position. Him and Anthony Davis are power forward centers, whatever you want to call them. They're those like hybrid power forward center guys. And AD has done a great job on him in the past. And he, that last game, he got in some foul trouble. But you think you're gonna. You gotta hope that he's not going to do that again. And I think you need to make sure you slow him down, because if you slow him down, then that's, really limiting what the Spurs want to do. And the other thing I just want to throw out there matchup-wise is in regards to the question you asked Ollie, this might surprise Ollie, but I have a different opinion on who I would hide Rondo on. I would actually hide him on Kyle Anderson. As much as I love Kyle Anderson, he's not a guy who's looking to score. He's not an aggressive guy. He's more looking to set other guys up. And while he has a clear size advantage over Rondo's wingspan is enough to give him a little bit of trouble. And you got to think that we're going to get that engaged Rondo anyway. So he's going to be better defensively. And Kyle Anderson is not a quick player. So I think that's a matchup I would look at. Also, he's not a good perimeter shooter. So he's not going to kill you on the perimeter if Rondo can just stay in front of him enough to guide him into, a Davis or an Okafor or Diallo who's protecting the rim. I think that's the way to go. And then it also helps Etuan Moore out, because then he gets to go guard a guard instead of, getting beat up by, a much bigger Kyle Anderson if he does, try to play through Etuan Moore. So that's the way I would go there. But I would definitely... I think, when your best player is the same position as the other team's best player, you want those guys going at each other. You want them feeding off of that guy and taking pride in trying to shut him down. And I think that's the way to go with Anthony Davis in this matchup.
I feel like that's an important question, so I'm going to bounce it off Ollie as well. Should Anthony Davis go head-to-head with LaMarcus and get into foul trouble early, let's say two fouls in the opening quarter, do you change your plan at that point and put somebody else on Aldridge?
Yeah, I think you almost have to, right? It's a game where you got to keep your star players on the court no matter what, and if LaMarcus, for whatever reason, is getting Anthony Davis out of position, just basically – fooling him into certain stupid fouls or whatever it may be. You've got to go ahead and try maybe give Mirotić some time on him. And if last resort, I guess you got to go to your bench and go to Okafor. Can't imagine Diallo having any success against him. But granted, I'm not expecting that. I don't think any of us should, because for the most part, AD, he may pick up a foul or two, but he's normally very good in that category. He will not always – he's never normally that guy that's a threat of fouling out. So coaches never have to worry about pulling them off. But also, want to talk about a case scenario, maybe that would happen.
Also, Aldridge is he's mainly a mid-range jump shooter. He's not like a guy that's driving and dunking where you normally get in fouls. As long as AD doesn't leave his feet on jump shots, you shouldn't have too many opportunities for him to foul him.
Yeah, but Aldridge can get aggressive. I don't know. I've watched a lot of the Spurs this year, and whenever he's got somebody slightly smaller, he will attack them in the post. And then he's also done a good job of attacking the glass, too. Kevin, you're right. When he's shooting the ball, he's obviously out of position and usually getting the offensive rebound. But when the offense isn't going through him, I think he's done a wonderful job in, getting involved elsewhere.
Now, this will come across as a hot take, and I do confess on this podcast that I don't know basketball as well as Ollie and Kevin do. With that being said, Rudy Gay is going to come off the bench, but he is going to play starters minutes or somewhere close to it. I wouldn't mind seeing Rajon Rondo try his luck on him. Obviously, Rudy Gay is going to back him down on the post every single time, and he's going to ask for the ball every single time. But there are opportunities for guys to swing over and help him, whether it be Diallo, whether it be AD, whether it be Mirotić or Okafor. And I don't think Rudy Gay can take advantage of Rondo on the perimeter. Obviously, he's going to try to fight on screens like these guys are, but it just makes me nervous. Kyle Anderson has great foot speed. He's got that wingspan that he can use if he can get under the basket to get an easy lay-in. DeJounte Murray is lightning quick and has that excellent stop-and-pop jumper. Patty Mills, lightning quick too. He fights over screens and can drain an easy three. Danny Green's another compelling one. He is really fast, and he does fight over screens, and he does remain active. But like Ollie said, he hasn't been shooting well. So in the starting lineup, I think that might be a compelling place to put Rondo. So that'll be interesting to see how Alvin Gentry adjusts to the last time that they played these guys. Let's move on. We're pretty much set, and we can wrap it up after a couple of questions. We actually got, I think, six this time. So thank you so much to JC's dad, Clint White Solomon, Eagles 2001 and playoff times Pelicans. I'm going to start with JC's dad, and we'll start with Kevin. And he is basically basking in the glory of Dell Demps and the success that he's had this year. He says, how impressed are you that Dell was able to craft a roster that includes four of the top 70 players in the league?
Oh, I mean, it's great. I mean, you know, I've always been team Dell. So I think, you know, it's just another feather in his cap. I mean, for a while, Mirotić looked like he was struggling, you know, and now he looked like the player we're expecting, or even better than we were expecting, honestly, I would say, those last few games. But to acquire a talent like him and dump Omer Asik for just a first-round pick and also get a second-round pick back in the process, I mean, that's an incredible move coming off the heels of also acquiring, you know, DeMarcus Cousins last year. And now we're going into we'll go into the off season and, you know, everybody's, you know, I'd say we're all 99.9% sure at minimum that Boogie will be back. And now you have a roster with these kinds of talents that also provide you with a crazy amount of flexibility in lineups and play styles where you can create so many problems for other people. I think he's done a marvelous job of assembling a roster. I thought he did a good job before when he got Drew Holiday and Tyreek Evans and even Ryan Anderson, who was a player I didn't necessarily enjoy, but he is a guy that I understood his fit and what they wanted to do. And I think that roster would have been successful had he not had the injury luck that he had. So, I mean, I feel like he's done a great job, and I'm very happy that he's, you know, getting accolades and praise now because he's been through a lot in his tenure here. He's dealt with so many issues, and he's gotten a lot of slander because of things that were beyond his control, injuries, death of a player, all these kinds of things that he's dealt with. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very happy for Dell Demps, and I'm very happy for us because, you know, he did give us those players. We have Anthony Davis. We have DeMarcus Cousins. We have Drew Holiday. We have Mirotić. We have role players like Rondo and Ian Clark and Etuan Moore that are all quality guys, you know, and it's exciting.
Ollie, I'm going to throw this one over to you, and of course, feel free to chime back in on that subject if you'd like. This one is from Clint White, and it says, come playoffs, does Emeka Okafor take back the Cheick Diallo minutes, or has he been completely superseded in the rotation?
Good question. I had this on radio show earlier today, and I feel like Alvin Gentry is partially showing his hand as we're finishing the season up, and he wants to emphasize small ball. That's why Mirotić has moved in the starting lineup. That's why Diallo is earning minutes currently ahead of Okafor. I mean, these are all games the Pelicans had to win. So it's not like this is any kind of development. This isn't any kind of, let's see what we have in this guy. Maybe he can, you know, go ahead and jump ahead of a mech on a depth chart. No, the Pelicans coaching staff has made their move, and it's echoing nothing but small ball to me. So I do think that Diallo is going to get first opportunity over a mecha. I think that they just think that his speed and his ability just to do just to cover more players in general on the defensive end, because of that speed and quickness offers the versatility that they're trying to maintain throughout the lineup. That being said, I feel like they're a little bit underselling Okafor. I mean, we've all talked about, especially you, Preston, you've hammered this point where Okafor has made a difference in so many games. And it's not just his rebounding, and it's not just defending that rim, but he switched off on a few guys. He has shown his ability, or this ability, to not be completely overwhelmed when put out of play. So that being said, I mean, I think that he'll be that. It's good to have that backup, but I'm not expecting him to earn minutes ahead of anybody. No, what we've seen lately in terms of the minutes that have been staggered and handed out by the coaching staff. That's going to continue in the playoffs.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of spots where I would prefer to see Okafor over Diallo, and against Portland is one of the principal ones. And should the Pelicans need help going against LaMarcus Aldridge, that's definitely an assignment that I would rather lean towards Emeka Okafor on. With that being said, check Diallo. He's come out of these games at the outset kind of slow, but he's always put on the gas pedal as the game goes along, and he just keeps getting better and better. So certainly hope for the best for him. Hope that he can come up big in these playoffs, and we see a lot more Wakanda Forever salutes. Here's two questions from Solomon. I'm going to roll over the first one if you guys don't mind. He says, what the heck is up with Solomon Hill? And I think we already answered that one to an extent. I think he's still dealing with that hamstring in case we didn't mention it. And his shooting touch obviously was never really quite there with the exception of the Houston Rockets game last year. But with that being said, Jamel McMillan said on the podcast a while back that he was draining threes at a pretty impressive clip over the offseason. So hopefully he's able to regain whatever touch he was practicing then. But I think it's a health thing. I think he's lacking a lot of lateral mobility at this point. But hopefully he can get some of that back as we go into the playoffs, because the Pelicans could certainly use a solid perimeter defender. Here is the second question that I think is very interesting that I want to ask Kevin. Should Alvin Gentry and Dell Demps be extended this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, why not? They've done nothing to say that would make you say no. I mean, look, like I've said, I've been one of Gentry's harshest critics, but he's at least an average level coach, if not better than that. And it's hard to find something that's better than that, out there. So by replacing him, you're setting back continuity, which is going to be very important for a team that's, you know, trying to stay in the playoffs. If you were to make a change, I think it should be from within. So there is a level of continuity, but I don't think there should be a change made, because he's done enough to prove that he belongs here and that he has the guys believing in him. Now let's see how he, before I'm willing to say that he's a great coach, I want to see how he reintegrates once Boogie comes back, and if we play different styles, if we play different ways. But, you know, I'm not going to complain about the guy right now. I mean, he's doing great with a roster that fits what he wants to do. He's got solid rotations. He's putting the offense flows very well. You know, he's got guys playing the way he wants to play, and he has guys that can play the way he wants to play. So everything's clicking, and I don't see any reason to rock that boat, even if we were to get swept and destroyed in the playoffs, or we weren't even in a close game. I think, you know, the harm to the continuity is worse than the opportunity that you would gain by hiring someone else. That you're taking a gamble on them being better. You're taking a gamble on them connecting with guys like DeMarcus Cousins or Rajon Rondo. So, and, you know, like I've already said about Dell Demps, I'm a big Dell Demps supporter. I always have been. So I definitely think you got to bring him back. He had two huge home runs at the trade deadline 2 years in a row. And he's always been able to find those, you know, role players for cheap, or those stopgap guys to fill in till a guy can come back that keeps you afloat. So, yeah, I mean, there's no reason to make any changes.
I think I made it too easy on Kevin Ollie. I meant to be specific as to how many years. And here's why I asked this. DeMarcus Cousins, I think going into this offseason, I think it's inevitable that he's going to get a 2-year, $60 million contract. And here's why. One, so the Pelicans can have some kind of security going forward in case he doesn't bounce back from the Achilles. Also, it offers him the opportunity to get back on the market for that critical 10-year, whatever, supermax, 5-year, $207 million contract, whatever it is. He'll be eligible for that in just two more seasons. So it actually benefits both parties. So if you do extend Alvin Gentry and Dell Demps for multiple seasons, do you do it for just two or for more?
Well, if you do it for too few, it's going to look like a lame duck type of situation where you don't have enough trust. You're going to say that, okay, this season seems kind of flukish. Prove it to me again over the next two. I think they're going to have to go either all or nothing in, basically. And I think, honestly, the same thing with Boogie. Preston, while I like your take, and that's the one I had steadily fast to for the longest time, I don't think it's going to work out like that. I just, you know, I don't foresee it. I think that DeMarcus, honestly, is probably going to, and his agents are going to push for that 5-year kind of max, and he's going to get his money now. For a guy who's made as much money as he had in his career, and you got to think all the sponsorships and everything else he's gotten to, that considering this injury, considering it's unknown even to him on how the rest of his career is going to play out, it might be too big of a gamble to do otherwise, you know? I mean, there's betting on yourself, and then it's just being flat-out stupid. So I just foresee that Cousins is probably likely going to go ahead and sign for that longer-term deal, maybe about 4 years. But if it takes max, you know, I feel like that the players have all the leverage here, you know? So unless some kind of miracle can be worked out. But again, when have we seen Dell Demps and this front office be able to go ahead and keep or lower a player for less than their market price? It hasn't happened hardly at all. So I'm not expecting it. And therefore, Preston, I think that if you do re-sign Alvin Gentry, if you do re-sign Dell Demps, I think for at least Dell Demps, you've got to lock him up to a longer-term deal. Like I said, it's just a bad look when you only do it for 1 or 2 years, some kind of extension like that. Just doesn't look right. And then for Alvin, you only commit to him long-term if you think he's going to go ahead and remain a coach, a viable coach in this league for the next 4 years. And what I mean by that, he's getting up there in age. I'm sure there's a succession plan that's been considered at some point. So, you know, he's not going to continue coaching on forever, but yeah, it's all going to come down to what he really wants. But I think it'll be more than for 2 years. At least one of those two guys should net more than 2 years.
All right, Kevin, we've got just two left. Sorry, this one has been a bit longer. We've been a bit longer. There's more to talk about recently, or it's more fun to talk, I guess, when your team is doing really well. This one is from Eagles 2001, and he says, talk about your level of surprise at – oh, no, he's referring to on the season. One of his biggest surprises is just how important Rajon Rondo has been to the locker room. Obviously, we heard reports in Chicago, him being, you know, voted as the best teammate by guys like Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic, were very vocal about what he meant to them. But with that being said, of course, he's had these ongoing disputes with Ray Allen in the media. We remember the fallout of Rick Carlisle and the Mavericks, who wouldn't give him any of their playoff bonuses. And of course, in Sacramento as well, are you surprised at just how integral Rajon Rondo has been to this team's success behind closed doors?
No, you know, I'm really not. And I think we said that early in the offseason. I think Ollie and I both agreed on this. That, you know, you hear all this baggage about this guy. And I think that the thing with Rajon Rondo is he's a very highly intelligent person, and very intelligent people question things and they question authority. And in an old school basketball environment, a lot of old school coaches like a Rick Carlisle or, you know, he didn't play for George Karl, but let's just say George Karl. Or did he play for George Karl? He was the Kings coach at the time, right? Yeah. That's right. So those kind of guys are going to bristle at a player questioning everything that they do. And a guy like Rondo, from what we learn about him and what we learned a lot about him, I felt like on media day, was that he was a guy that would question you constantly, but it wasn't because he was second guessing you. He just wanted to understand why you wanted to do things the way you wanted to do them, so he could understand that, because he really wanted to learn. He wanted to know everything there was to know. Now, he's a very competitive guy, and he obviously can be clearly a petty guy with his, you know, with his stuff with Ray Allen and with Isaiah Thomas, those kind of things. But I think having a coach like Alvin Gentry, who is not a Rick Carlisle, who's not, you know, even say, you know, not a Tom Thibodeau, like he wouldn't have worked. Rajon Rondo would not have worked with Monty Williams, where he would work with Alvin Gentry, because Alvin Gentry is more a flexible, easygoing, laid back, open sort of coach in that aspect. Whereas those other guys are more rigid and set in stone and old school and, you know, I'm the boss, you know, kind of mentality. So I never really doubted him being an issue in the locker room, especially when you have DeMarcus Cousins signing off on him, and that's the guy that you were mostly worried about pleasing this offseason. And then when we went to media day, you could see every player was just gushing about Rondo and being around him and how great it is to pick his brain and to, you know, how smart he was and how he was going to make everybody better and how he opened up everybody's game. And I feel like even when he was struggling, you know, in those certain matchups that he struggles in, or those slumps that he would go in where he wasn't looking well, or the effort wasn't there on the court, and we were questioning his ability on the floor, we never questioned his IQ and what the intangibles that he brought to the team, because we saw him coaching people on the floor. We saw him coaching from the bench. Like, I sit behind the bench, so I see him. talking to players constantly, standing up, barking out orders. You know, he's a guy that's involved, and we needed a guy like that. You know, the guys that we've had before that were supposed to be those guys were like Kendrick Perkins and John Salmons, which, I mean, Kendrick Perkins, I liked him, and he was on some good teams, but he's not a guy that's going to earn the respect that like Rajon Rondo had in his important role in a title team in Boston, and the respect he has throughout the league. So I feel like that was a home run in terms of locker room bonding and chemistry and overall team IQ. And so I didn't question it. And I think we were very clear about that early on in the offseason on podcasts and articles that we've written, Ali and I. I mean, I know there's, other writers on our team, on our from the Bird Rights don't like him or have issues with him. But I think for us that we had no concerns.
Kevin, let's wrap this up. I think we're somewhere around an hour and 10 minutes. Give us a prediction for the San Antonio Spurs on Wednesday.
I think, you know, I said it last pod that I thought we would win this game, and I still think we'll win this game. I think it's going to be a very exciting game. I think it's a game that the crowd will be very much into, very electric, like the last time we closed the season against the Spurs to go into the postseason. That one obviously meant more, but this is still very important, and the fans will be there. And I think it will play out sort of similarly. I think we'll have a pretty good lead going into halftime. We'll ride the crowd, and then Popovich will make adjustments, and we'll have a slow third quarter. They'll catch back up on us, but we'll fight through in the fourth, and it'll be a close win in the end. And I'll say 110-107 Pelicans.
All right. What about you, Ollie?
I think the Pelicans are going to win as well. They've just been too good of late. And so you expect the effort to be there. You just need enough execution. I think for a Spurs team, this isn't a typical Spurs team where they has a lot of weapons because, you know, Kawhi Leonard's missing, because they haven't had the shooting that maybe Popovich would want. So I just think as long as the Pelicans are above average, that they should beat a very average Spurs team. So I'll give them, I don't know, I think it's going to be a little bit lower score. I think it's going to be a lot more defensive oriented. So I'm going to go with about 103-98.
Wow, you guys certainly are confident. And I do think the Pelicans are the better team in this matchup. With that being said, the Pelicans haven't really taken care of business against playoff opponents as of late, with the exception of the Golden State Warriors. But with that being said, the Golden State Warriors have nothing to play for at this moment. And also, you've got guys like Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, who are on minutes restrictions because they're still playing for the regular season. In this one, you're going to see the full allotted total, probably 40 minutes from LaMarcus Aldridge. Whoever is hot, they're going to ride them as long as they need to in order to get this win. So this one is definitely going to be a dogfight. I think Kevin's assessment, 110. God, I got to get some sleep. 110-107 is probably pretty apt. Let's go Pelicans. Let's see if we can wrap up a fifth seed and possibly get a matchup with Portland and Utah. Utah has two games left. If they can manage to take care of Golden State tonight and then Portland tomorrow, guess what, guys? We get to face Portland. That's right, Ollie?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I can't wait for these 2 days in. By the way, I am so tired and my brain hurts from looking at all these possible scenarios, man.
All right. I'm tired too. I had to work early this morning, but I stayed up last night. Make sure that you guys give the OTG Basketball Network a follow. Last night I guested it in and I hosted their social media account for them, trying to cover the Pelicans as best that I could. I might do that again, possibly for a playoff game or tomorrow against the Spurs, if we've got somebody running the Bird Rights handle, just to generate some more traffic to them and to generate some more traffic to us. For now, that's it, Pels fans. Thank you for tuning into our playoff edition. We're going to have so much more coverage coming your way in the upcoming weeks. Of course, we're going to recap the Spurs game on Thursday. Then we're going to have some previews and some recaps after every game for the rest of the Pelicans' time in the postseason. I'm trying to get a hold of J.R. Wilco, somebody I've had on the pod 3 to 4 times before, the editor of Pounding the Rock. He is a fantastic interview. Ollie, I don't know if you can help me with that. I haven't heard from him today, so I have reached out to the rest of their site and their network. That's probably more information that you guys needed to hear, but whatever. As always, send your questions to me at Preston Ellis. And for all you dissenters out there who may not like me, you can send all of your comments to at Ollie Cosell. We've got a big home game on Wednesday. Make sure that we sell it out, pack the Smoothie King Center. Kevin, before I let us go, anything from you?
Sure. Well, while I've not written anything new in a little bit. I want to get back into that. I've been focusing a little bit on art, but I do have an art-based thing coming up soon where I'm going to design these new shirts that are Chuck Diallo themed, that are a play off of Chuck D from Public Enemy, which I wish David Grubb was still on because he's actually wearing a shirt that I'm based for the album that I'm basing this off of for in his avatar, but it's a Fear of a Block Jumper, and he's going to be doing the Wakanda pose with the Pelicans hat on, and it's going to be pretty cool, I think, and I'll launch that soon. Hopefully, I'm trying to tighten that up, then I'll get back to writing.
That sounds awesome. Again, follow him at Kevin B for Bounce, and once again, follow David at DM Grub and at Crescent City Sports. Ali, editor-in-chief to thebirdrights.com, what have we got coming from you?
We got a lot of stuff, Preston. There's so much to write about. How well the Pelicans have been playing down the stretch, how they got in the playoffs, what to expect in the playoffs, what players we can rely on, lineups to see. There's going to be a whole slew of things, including some roundtables, which you mentioned to me, and I think we got to bring those back. That's a good idea, too.
All right. Thanks so much, Ali. Thank you to Kevin. Thank you for David. This has been our post-playoff edition of the Bird Calls. A very exciting time to be a Pelicans fan, as we discussed with David. Not just for the organization, not just for Anthony Davis, Jrue Holiday, all these guys who put in the work, our friend Jamel McMillan, but also for the community, for the people of New Orleans who haven't really enjoyed too much basketball success in the 15-year history in New Orleans of the New Orleans Pelicans / Hornets. So really exciting time. Hope that it keeps rolling. Hope that it the Pelicans are able to upend San Antonio, because, man, if they are able to secure the fifth, possibly even the fourth seed into the playoffs and draw a team like Portland, there's just no guaranteeing what could or could not happen in the first round. So definitely stay locked in here. Stay locked in to the Bird Rights and OTG, where you can catch some of my work over there, as well as our podcast being hosted there. And for now, let's go Pels. You have been listening to The Bird Calls. Thank you for listening. If you like what you're hearing, do us one more favor. Go to iTunes, subscribe, and rate our podcast today.